And here we are. It is the first day of August 2019, 15 minutes past the hour. And this segment of the show this morning, this hour, is a little segment we have been doing for quite a while here on the station. I believe about 6 months now, or maybe a little more, with Pastor Steve Whitaker, who also is the host of The Pastor Spot, which airs live every Tuesday from 5:10 to 6 p.m., replays Wednesday 3:10 to 4, and Sunday from 8:10 until 9 a.m. This segment is Over the Back Fence, where we just talk about anything and everything going on in the world. We haven't had the chance to do it in about a month, so it's great to welcome back for this hour Pastor Steve Whitaker. Pastor, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good morning. How are you, Scott?
Good. It's it's fun to be up at this hour having conversations because you are with people in their car as they're going to work. You're with people as they're getting ready for the day. And here in about 3 weeks, people getting ready for school.
You're right. And, you know, one thing that's interesting about morning talk, I know with me, because I listen to it, in the morning, first thing when I'm on the road, I would rather listen to conversation than I would music. Just because I think maybe it stimulates me or wakes me up more. But I find it interesting how your day starts many times sets the tone for your day.
It really does. I was reading an article the other day that if you wake up nervous or anxious or in a bad mood, that it is more difficult to change that throughout the course of the day than it would be if that episode happened at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, I believe that's probably true. I know with me, you and I wake up every morning. The first thing that I do is I pray and I ask God to let me have a good day and be the person I should and do the things that I should. And I try to keep that in mind. It's good to go back to that reminder when things start to go south that I did that. But, it's real interesting in the morning. I found myself at points throughout my life in different times listening to different talk shows. And I like talk shows. But when they get heavily, with me, when they get heavily political and when they push buttons, I find that it puts me in a bad mood. And I have found myself not wanting to listen to that stuff at all because I see that it triggers feelings I don't want to feel. And I think that we can stay very much aware sometimes without overdoing it, listening to that stuff repeatedly over and over. So what I'm getting at with that is the type of show that you're doing here in the morning, a variety show. How's that kind of in a way?
I think that's it, yeah.
It's something to people to listen to and get their day off started with and charge them well and have some positive things out there for them to take for the rest of the day.
Well, it's interesting because I'm thinking of the first three shows we've done, and this is show number four, and I don't believe we've had a political segment yet. Now, just happenstance that the Democratic debates have been this week. So the next 2 hours, we will talk with Mary Ellen Withrow about the debates. But that's about it this week. There's nothing tomorrow on the agenda politically. Mm-hmm. So it is like a variety show. And I think politics is part of the variety, but it's also giveaways. It's also Carol Looper, who was just on. It's also the segment we do here. It's also Jeff Ruth and Charlie Evers yesterday for 2 hours talking about the history of Marion Radio. It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah, that's some great stuff that's on. I'll try not too much to listen to the political side of it. I'm trying to, not be uninformed. I want to be informed, but not let that run my day. How's that?
Well, you know what it is for me about these events, national events, which I would say this is national election, so on and so forth. To me, what I've always felt in that local radio can do is take a local person and get their observation. Mm-hmm. And I think because that you won't hear anywhere else, because that's usually my rubric for what you want to do on your show. Something people can't hear anywhere else.
And they can relate to because it is local.
It is a local person. So to sit and play clips of what happened last night or just to read in the paper what people thought, well, people can read the paper themselves. But to get somebody local's take on it, this is the only place you're going to hear that person's take on it.
Right. And you can agree with them completely.
Or disagree.
Or you can be completely disagree with what they say. And you have that option.
But you never know what they're going to say. That's the interesting thing that I have found. Just when you think you know exactly what somebody's going to say, something will come out that you say, well, I didn't think that was coming.
That's why we have that 30-second delay.
That's right. That's exactly right. Sometimes. You know, the topic this morning, which I think is fascinating and I want to get into, and we'll get as specific and non-specific as you would like to get on this, but the broader topic is when you're doing radio or television or whatever people are doing now, media, the idea that people sometimes can misinterpret what you say or totally confuse what you say in any way and decide to make it a point to take somebody to task on this. This is happening everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. You take little... many times they didn't even say it, and other times there's little snippets. I know that in politics, there's trigger words, and they go in cycles. And you can take... somebody can say something... a trigger phrase about a particular person or a candidate or something, and before you know it, all the news media is using it, and it just it's kind of funny to watch. But you know, people do that too. When you're around certain kind of people and they're saying things, you start picking up the same things they say, and you start using some of the same little phrases and words. That's how things take off and go. But I think that in radio, you do have an opportunity because it's so free. That when that does happen, you have an opportunity, if you choose to right a wrong on air. And that's sometimes a good thing to do. Sometimes it's better to let something go, and depending on who says it and how it's said. But yeah, you're right. It is it's pretty interesting the way people will interpret what they hear. And sometimes people hear what they want to hear.
Well, that's the problem, because 20 years ago, and maybe this is why bullying in school has also become a bigger issue, if you didn't like something somebody said, if you disagreed, or if you totally misheard it altogether, you might tell that to your wife, you might tell that to your child, you might tell that to one of your friends at work, but there was no forum to go and say something that is totally untrue to a semi-mass audience, but mm-hmm. Now you can. Facebook.
I'll tell you something I've seen that's kind of funny when you go on Facebook. Someone will say something very vague to get something started. And I heard a comment that someone, it wasn't even on my page, someone was telling me about, someone made a comment yesterday that was this vague. It said, essentially, pray for so-and-so, because they did this to so-and-so, but it didn't put the exact people's names in there. It just made people wonder. So immediately, people start hitting that and say, private message me. So then that person private messages them. They spread the rumor, but they're not actually the one spreading the rumor because they never said it. This is the kind of stuff social media has done, and it's amazing. And it's sad in a way, because it does start rumors and things that aren't true and half-truths. And I wish sometimes that we had a few more things in our life that were important enough that we didn't have to resort to feelings on everything. Everything, if nothing external triggers me too much, that I'm solid. I remember when my mom married my stepfather, he told her, my mom had been a widow for 15 years and she remarried. And he told her this. He said, one thing I can promise you, he said, I'll be steady. And that always set in my head, because he was right. He wasn't changing. He was who he was, and he felt how he was, and that's who he was. And I think if more of us were comfortable in our own skin, we wouldn't go to social media would not have to direct how we feel every day. You know, some people just can't help but see how many responses they get to themselves constantly. One of the ones that really gets me is the constant selfies. What are people looking for in that?
Compliments.
Yeah. And why are they looking for them?
Because they have bad self-esteem.
Exactly. And we need, you know, what are you going to do to pick that self-esteem up? Myself personally, I mean, everyone knows I'm a pastor, but I find my self-esteem and my grounding in what I believe God believes in me and what God is to me. And that's unshakable. That's a solid rock to me. And because of that, I can let a lot of things roll off my back. I don't have to take things so personally. And I wish that more people could do that or see that or even understand the value of, we don't have as many people going to church today as we used to. And even those going, a lot of them want to pop in and pop out and they don't get involved. And I think that when people are grounded like that, they don't worry so much about what the other people say, what the other people do. It's real interesting, Scott, that in... you know, a lot of the Apostle Paul's writing, he addressed a dress. And when we read that, a lot of people think that, you know, oh, that's ancient. Or, but his point was good. His point was, when he told women how to adorn themselves, part of it was because the wealthy women of that day would come in with braided hair, with gold braided into their hair, and all these things. And it made people that weren't wealthy feel less. And he said, let's not do this. Let's love one another and let's comfortably learn together without having to lord over someone. And I think that social media does that in a way. You know, we have find a way through media to lord over each other and look at me, I'm better than you, or I didn't do that, or look what this person did. Look how terrible they are. And it's like you've said before many times on the we've had the conversation many times, that a lot of times people go to medias that agree with them. And it's something that, you know, bolsters how they feel, even though we call that in the church preaching to the choir.
You have it. And, you know, it's funny because we have to, but I think it deserves talking about a lot because I think it's one of the biggest problems we have. And I don't criticize people who are doing their own programs on YouTube or podcast because I think, good, if you want to do that, do that. But the problem I have with it is the problem if people were listening a half hour ago when I was talking to Carol Looper, it's kind of the conversation that we were having, which was you have to understand that a podcast, a YouTube show, a live stream, if it's not attached to what we would call legitimate media, even though I'm not sure I like that word, broadcast media, newspapers, whatever it may be.
Right, right.
If it's not attached to that, you've got to understand what you are getting is that person's total point of view, and they are not fact checkers. They are not news people. They are not journalists. They have not been, and nobody's challenging them. It's their forum. They created the forum, and they're using the forum. So you can't take it at, if you are sitting there listening to a podcast or a YouTube show going, boy, that's great. Boy, that's great. And that's all you're doing for the entire duration of the show. Probably shouldn't be listening to that show because reaffirming what you think already.
Right. Unless on that show it's something that is presenting something positive and a point of view that maybe is encouraging. There are good things to do that way.
More opinions is what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, more opinions. And but it's the same thing even though on broadcast media because, you know, when we have a politician on or someone like that, you're going to get their opinion. And you're not going to get always a lot of real facts, but you're going to get a lot of opinion mixed with facts. When someone comes on and starts calling another politician A, B, or C, whether it be a liar, a racist, that's their opinion. You would have to go to facts to find out, are they a racist? Are they a, you know, you see what I mean? So you get that there too. But the good thing about the broadcast media is there's people like you that in a sense are the controller of what's going on. And you can call that back. You can go back and say, no, wait a minute. Or you can, I've watched you, Scott, to be honest, you're very good at trying to bring something back to where it's you challenge people. I'm not always not heavily and not in an argumentative way, but you sometimes challenge a conversation to bring it back to where it's supposed to be. And you're right, because in the podcast thing, no one's challenging them.
You know, it's funny. Recently, this happened, and I thought this was funny. I thought, boy, I'm exactly where I want to be as far as doing this job goes, is without getting into exactly who and what it was, there was something going on, an election. And at that time, I was getting a lot of emails and a lot of phone calls and a lot of on-air calls about, boy, you are slanted so way for this person. You are slanted in that direction, which I wasn't. I was just challenging what was going on. And then recently, the other person in that election, somebody sent me a message saying, well, it's clear now you've went the other way. It's clear now you've drank the Kool-Aid and you're going in the opposite. And it was so ironic to me, because the same people were so sure that I was in the opposite direction, now chastising me because apparently I've left them and I've went the other way. When I'm just trying to ask
questions. You're just putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a topic.
Yeah, and people do get... I do something odd that a lot of... In our church setting, and in how I deal with people daily as a pastor, a lot of times in very formal settings, a pastor will come out and he will give a message and he'll step back and you don't see him anymore. The difference is I'm an interactive pastor. You know, a pastor to me is a shepherd. A shepherd dealt personally with a sheep, and I encourage people to question me. I encourage people to bring those things back. And, you know, to me, that's a great help, because they can challenge in that way and they don't have to just take the word and go. So, you know, it's a good thing that you do that. You interact with different sides, because I've listened to you a lot of times. And if I were just a person looking for an issue, I could call you. One day I may call you a hard right person. Next day I may call you a moderate. Next day you could be a total liberal, Scott. And the point is, because you're challenging people and you're putting things out there. One thing interesting that I've tried in church several times, and it's just to keep people on their toes. I'll chase a rabbit scripturally down a wrong road that sounds great, and then I'll stop and say, that's not true. And I'll show... And I'll go back to where it's supposed to be, because I want people to realize, don't take everything at face value. You have a personal responsibility, you really do, to search for yourself, judge for yourself, and everyone has that. But at the same time, I think that those of us that are in this venue, in this position to speak where people can hear it publicly, we have a responsibility to make sure that what we're saying is factual. And if you are in a podcast or doing something and you're just throwing opinion out there and it's not factual, shame on you.
Well, the interesting thing about that to me, as a person who hosts a show, what's fascinating about that to me is that if you don't have a guest, which I would hate, and there are times that I don't have guests, but in those times what I normally do is I go to some kind of trivia, or I go to some kind of a news story that I think is funny or interesting. I couldn't imagine sitting down with the agenda that every show was going to be all me and just my opinions. That, because, for example, we really did not talk about, and certainly not what we're talking about now, plan this hour out. This hour is live right now. What you're hearing is what's happening right now. I don't know what your response is going to be to what I'm saying. Now, if you or I were doing a podcast right now, there would be no response. We would know exactly what was going to be said, because it's coming out of our head. We planned it. It's done. There's no challenge. I could say something right now that you totally disagree with, and you'll tell me that. I don't know that that's coming. Doesn't happen on a podcast or a live stream if you're controlling the room.
If you're controlling the room.
Yeah.
And you almost have to have two people there for this to... Well, you do have to have two people for this to happen. And that's what I love about doing this live, is that I have no clue what you're going to say either. We have no script. Matter of fact, even on the pastor spot, the show that I do. I have never had a script in front of me, ever. And the only thing I may have in front of me is if I'm going to use a scriptural passage or the Bible, I'll have that and I'll read that with it with what I'm doing. But as far as a script, this works much better because what you get is raw honesty, or you know, from that person. You get spontaneity. And you don't necessarily get that in those podcasts because this is my agenda and this is what I'm going to get out there today. And like you just said, I have no... When we came in this morning, I had some thoughts in my mind about some things I'd like to talk about, but that, by the way, we haven't got to yet.
That's right. We haven't got there.
But at the same time, we're just spontaneous. In that vein, I do want to mention a couple of things real quickly because it is a morning show and people are on their way to work, and I want to catch some, let them know some things that are going on. If you're in the Elgin School District, the elementary school supply giveaway will be at the school on the 8th. I believe it's between 10 and noon. I'll correct that on the pastor spot if that's wrong, but I believe it is. I wanted to mention so people would know that they could get their kids, some kids' school supplies there if they're in need of those things. And also, this is next week will be in Prospect at Community Christian Fellowship. Will be our last week of summer lunch program for the kids and for seniors. So that's going on at the church, 209 East Water. And then I wanted to say one other thing that I did want to bring up is, what a beautiful morning it was out when I was driving in. I actually stopped and took a picture. You know, we've seen some beautiful mornings lately. And for the rainy spring we've had, you know, it's just been gorgeous. And as you're driving to work and you're thinking about, everyone's got bills, those are usually on their mind. Weekends coming up, think about going to church. But another thing to think about, there's so many inexpensive or free things to do that you can do with your kids. The Marion Tallgrass Trail is just a wonderful thing. You know, get out there with your family and just take a walk. There's different parks. There's a heritage park over by Delaware. There's, if you just get online and type in these things, you can find them. And take your kids and your family and do something. Spend some positive time with them. Wouldn't that be a great thing to do? Maybe as you're going to work, you can start turning these things over in your head and thinking about, what am I going to do with my family this week?
Well, it's funny you bring that up in a way, because I've never met anybody, no matter what their income or job was, who didn't worry about their bills in some way.
Oh, it doesn't matter income level, you do.
But I think sometimes the people who are stressing out about this day after day after day, they think they're the only one. They think, why am I in this job where I'm not making enough money? Why can't I cover my bills? Am I going to have this shut off or that shut off? I think sometimes it feels very lonely, but it's not. It's not at all.
No, I mean, if you, and everyone's on a different level. And even people that, you know, have a lot of money, their biggest concern many times is keeping it. Is my bottom line going up or down? And it creates a great fear. You know, Scott, I've known more people that at one point in their life have had very little, that have eventually had a lot. And I preferred them as people when they had very little. When I look at it, and let me qualify that a minute. What I mean by that is, when they had very little, it was so much easier for them to take advantage of the simple things in life, and things weren't too complicated. And as you begin to have more and acquire more, you worry about keeping it, and you worry about going back to where you were when you didn't have anything, and oh, what if this happens? And you have a whole new set of problems you never had before. You know the old saying, everyone's probably heard of this, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip. Well, when you become that turnip, and when you're living as that turnip, believe it or not, there's a little bit of freedom in that, because you don't have to worry about any major collapse coming down and wiping you out, because you've been living there. Yeah. And in a way, you know, living paycheck to paycheck, you can probably always find a job living paycheck to paycheck. But if you have acquired a mass amount of stuff, and you take great pride in the home and maybe the properties and the luxuries that you have. And the fear of all that being stripped out from under you can sometimes be a very heavy burden. And it leads people to that's all they focus on is keeping stuff. Where when you didn't have anything, all you did was your job. You focused on a couple bills, and you had freedom to be with your family, freedom to do other things. So what I'm saying in a weird way is, and I know this because of my own life, sometimes there's great, great freedom in simplicity. You know, don't feel like you're in the worst spot in the world because you don't have what other people have. And something else that's interesting in that vein is that I talked to people. I was having a conversation with another pastor one day that said to me, you know, when we were kids, we were poor and never knew it. And I could say that we were the same way. And I didn't know I was poor. I knew that we didn't have what some other people had, but they had what they had, and that's the way that was. And because when credit came into play, and people could now get things they couldn't really afford, and a lot of things start changing, suddenly the field looks more even out there. And we, even if we don't have it, we can look like we have it. And because of that, people started desiring things they never would have desired before. When I was growing up, I kind of knew that we just didn't have those things, so I didn't worry about it. And or my family was that way. And I think every family was that way. But now, when you see somebody that has a lot, we have the opinion, why can't I have that? And I think that we've done ourselves a little bit of a disservice that we've done that. Because we've always had a place in the United States where if we desire something, we have the freedom to go after it. But I don't think that we used to have the pressure to go after it that we do now.
Well, you know, something that has fascinated me that I've just learned in recent years, I always thought, and it's not that people are living extravagantly, all people, but when people are under pressure that I'm going to lose whatever, I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to lose my car, I'm going to lose whatever, a lot of times what I've noticed is it's not so much the possession. It is sometimes, but that is their sanctuary. You know, where do you go to sleep? Where do you go to get away from it all? Where do you go to regroup? You know, how many times have people been on vacation? And a vacation's supposed to be a fun thing. I can't wait to get home. It feels so good to be home. Same thing with work every day. You know, no matter how much somebody loves their job, a lot of people will walk in the front door and, boy, it's good to be home. And even if home is a shack, it's home. And to lose that, I think, is security rather than a possession.
That's true. You know, you know the old saying, home is where the heart is. Yeah. And I could probably lend a bit of advice in that from, you know, experience over the years. And I think most people would agree with me. Make sure that you're not overstretching in the home. What I mean by that is, maybe that's a bad way to put it, it just didn't come to mind, overreaching your financial ability. And what I mean by that is, if your home needs to be a simple home to keep a home, have a simple home. You'll be much happier than if you try to stretch beyond something you can't afford just to make it look good or feel good or say, look what I've acquired, because then your home becomes a stress and you're afraid of losing it. And there's nothing wrong with living in a simple way and having the security of keeping it. Because like you said, home is where the heart is. If my sanctuary is, if I'm a single person and my sanctuary is going to my rooming house where I have a room and getting away and closing that door, that's my sanctuary. And you're right, it is hard for people. My wife is one of those that I think that one of her greatest fears is always, I don't want to lose my home. She's seen people lose their home. It's hard to lose that. And so my job, or one of the things I feel, and not just job, but I think my duty as a husband, and because I love her, is that to make sure that I have her in a situation where if something happens to me, my wife's not going to hold that fear of losing my home. But I think that a lot of times when we overstretch, all these things make us lose our home. You know, I'll give you a good example, boats. Now, it's great to have a nice boat, and a lot of people want a nice boat. So they go out and spend an extravagant amount of money on a boat. And when they think about what they, how many times they were able to take it out that year, do you know you can rent boats? I mean, you could go out and rent a boat twice, three times a year, because that's all you're going to take that boat out anyway most of the time once you've actually got it. When you want to go, and you have probably saved yourself thousands of dollars. You know you can rent a fancy car for the weekend to take a cruise up to wherever. You can rent a motorcycle. You know, that's people don't ever think of those things. And sometimes they acquire all this stuff that sits in garages, and I'm guilty. You know, I'm guilty of doing the same thing. Right now, I have a motorcycle I'm trying to get rid of that I do not ride. And so I understand these things. But if you take out, if you cut out those things that are not necessities, you can still enjoy life and do those things a lot of times, and you can protect that little, that sanctuary, that home is where the heart is.
Well, I think that's definitely true, and I think that, would you say finances are probably the number one worry in people's lives?
Absolutely.
I would say.
And that's sad. Think about that. Isn't that sad that it is? I think that we've created a lot of this. There's always, you know, my thought of wealth, to me, is making sure that I don't have to stress every month what's going to be paid. I've gotten past the point in my life where I worry about the trinkets so much. But, you know, am I going to be able to, are we going to flow into next month and not have a stress of that? I'll tell you, my biggest, one of my biggest concerns today is, you're going to giggle at this probably, is I've got 14 grandkids. And I want to make sure that I'm able to buy them a nice birthday present every year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I have a little bit of a different stress than what some might have.
Well, I think this is why Christmas every year is a big stressful time for a lot of people. You know, when you're younger and you're a child, it's a happy time because it's, you know, colorful and you're out of school and church services are going on and a lot of things people want to attend. But when you get older, if you have kids, a lot of people feel the need to have Christmas be a certain way. Mm-hmm. And boy, that can put the stress on you because the years of Christmas bonuses and things of that nature have kind of went by the wayside.
They have gone by the wayside. You know, one thing that we do at the church that and it kind of morphed into this. I mean, we've always done it, but we've tweaked it a little as we've gone along. And we do a huge Christmas, as you know, Christmas giveaway every year. And what we do is we have people come in and they sign up ahead of time or with the morning they come. And they go through, and someone helps them shop for their individual kids. And they usually get about 6 gifts apiece for each kid. And we have a wrapping station there. But what it's geared towards, it's not geared towards the people that are able to go out and do the Secret Santa and those kind of things. And there are a lot of agencies that help people. And it's Christmas time. I'm glad they do. They do, but it's geared towards those people that are what I call the working poor, that are working every day, but when they pay their bills, they literally just have enough to pay their bills. And if Christmas time rolls around and they want to buy their children things, they got a choice to make. Do I buy Christmas and not pay a bill and get behind and try to pay catch up, or do I pay the bill and not do Christmas? So what we try to do is we try to provide Christmas for those people that are kind of in that margin that people don't think about. Everyone thinks about the people that don't have anything at Christmas time, but they don't always think about the people that seem to be doing okay when really all they're doing is just feeding their family and getting literally just sneaking by. Yesterday, our ministerial association helped a lady that she was like, she had been in the hospital, brief time off work. She was a couple $100 short on her rent. And the reason she was, she had a choice to make. Do I pay my rent or my car payment? If I miss my car payment, they take my car and I can't work. So you gladly help people like that. And but yeah, you're right, Scott. Money is the biggest stressor, especially in marriages. There, I've seen more divorces that come around the same time as bankruptcies. And they do. I mean, it's just such a stressor. when your major stress and your major feeling is money, there's not a lot of room left there for love and compassion.
You know, what I've noticed is if somebody loses their job or they're not working or even sometimes just not making as much as the other person in the marriage, kind of a resentment comes out. Now, it doesn't start big, but over time, if it continues, a lot of people will resent that in a little bit of a way.
Well, I would have a piece of advice for that if you're in a marriage like that, and that is, I've seen that many times where it's unbalanced, the income earning, is that if you're in a marriage together and you're doing things together, make sure that you never throw that in the other person's face, because that will be starting a huge, it hurts, it's a hurt. When someone comes back to you and says, well, I'm going to make this decision because I make more than you anyway. You know, that's degrading. That's demeaning to them. Because what they're making is what they can make. They're doing the best that they can. They're just not making what you're making. Maybe they're not in the same field. So please don't do that to your spouse. That's a very, very hurtful thing.
You know, and time put in is also a big part of this. You know, if you are lucky enough to be in a certain field and be in it for a long time, well, in year 20, you're bound to be making more than you were in year number one. But if somebody has to start a whole new career for whatever reason, a lot of times you start out at the base salary, which is not with raises yet or incentives or promotions. But it comes. I mean, I know a gentleman right now who's in his mid-50s, and was in a certain career all of his life where he did make decent money. And for whatever reason, I never really got into it, but he decided to leave that career at 55 years of age. I don't know if it was conflict. I think it was conflict, but he left. And now he had to start out in a completely different field at 55 years old. And, you know, you start in as a new hire. You start in at what everybody else is making. And the happy part of this story is, this person's been in that job now for about 9 months and has already been promoted twice.
Great.
So there you, but at the first day on the job, I bet he had some anxiety because of what happened.
You know, Scott, I think that as a nation, as a society, money's always been an issue with people. And do they have enough wood chopped for the winter? Did they have enough money, meat in the smokehouse to get through a rough winter? I mean, the way it started. You know, and we've always had this issue, but I think that it can, through diligence, through work every day, for planning, for, you know, they say that, what's the old saying, failure to plan is planning to fail. And I think a lot of it through planning, the other things that we don't expect, but making sure that we can pay for the things we have. If I lose my job and I'm in a $80,000 or $100,000 house, and my payment is X amount of dollars, I'm not going to be as stressed as if I lose my job and I have a house payment for a $250,000 house. And the point is that you're going to have to come up with money, but it's going to be a lot easier to make some sense out of what you're doing. So I would encourage people not to live above their income. Don't worry about what other people think. Hey, I'd rather, who's going to look worse? The person that is able to keep what they have or the person that ends up losing what they have because they lived above their means? So just because it makes you look good today doesn't mean tomorrow you're going to look so good. Live within your means with what you have. And it's because you've got to learn to find your self-worth in something other than what you can buy.
Well, I always worry about people who are single and living alone and have created a lifestyle. Maybe they're buying a house, maybe they have a big car payment, and they can afford it with what they're doing now. But what if the day came where that job went away for whatever reason? Now, certainly if you were let go, in most cases you can get unemployment in Ohio, so you won't go flat to nothing. But is that going to be enough to handle what you have set up? Is that going to be long-term enough? What if there is a drought where you can't find a job for a long period of time? I don't know. I think that is a I think sometimes people spend every penny that they make.
Week to week. They do it. And I don't think that they always have to spend every penny that they make week to week.
Well, that's it. That's, you know, the car payment doesn't have to be $400.
Right. And they don't have to, well, look, we got, I'm getting paid Friday. I've got $200 left. Let's go blow it somewhere. How about sitting that aside in an account for, you know, they say that if and I know that people are going to say, well, I could never do that. But they say that you should put enough money back for 6 months. It would be great to have that in a fund somewhere in case something happens. And the truth is, with planning, you can do that. Now, I'm not saying I've always done that, but I'm saying that would be a good rule of thumb. When you have something extra, put it back. You know, the people that I know that are retired, that are living comfortably, most of them are doing it because they planned. You know, they just didn't, retirement didn't show up and suddenly this new ball of money dropped in their lap. They planned. You know, even Social Security, it was meant to be a supplement. It was never meant to have people completely live on Social Security. And most people do. And one thing we lack today, too, is families don't take care of families the way they used to.
You know, it's interesting. We have about 4 minutes left in the program before the top of the hour. But one thing that has always fascinated me, do you know the feeling that you get when you move into a new house or a new apartment? No matter how much you wanted it, or maybe that's the best decision for you, there is this weird phase when you first move in where it's a little bit uncomfortable because you're in a new place, it's a new surrounding, it's a new idea. Maybe you didn't know that the dogs bark at night, or your neighbors had pets that you didn't know about, or there's coyotes out back, that because it's just things you wouldn't know until you moved in. But you get there, you know, about a month in is what I always say is the point. Once you get the boxes unpacked that you need to have your essentials out, because that takes a minute too sometimes. Once you get that done, then it's more or less home.
Right.
And the feeling changes. So if you, I see this a lot in college kids who move out for the first time. They move into that place that they wanted so much. They wanted to be away from their parents. They wanted to be on their own.
They go home the first week.
They do, well, the first month is depressing because there's not somebody there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There's not somebody to talk to all the time. And a lot of time it is a bare apartment because if you're a college kid, usually you haven't accumulated a whole lot at that point. But yet, give it a month. And then it's sad when they have to leave that. That's their first apartment. They always have good feeling about that. The first place I lived was this little small place, but boy, did I love being there. But they did in the first month.
You know, we have an amazing ability as people to adapt. And we adapt to a new home, we adapt to a new place, and it does become home. I know that one move we made, my wife told me, she said, I'm not going there. I won't like. And then after a few years, well, I'm never leaving here. So yeah, we do adapt. But hey, this has been a good show this morning. I've enjoyed the time. A lot of bounced around some subjects, but they were all kind of positive.
Very positive. And people out there are driving to work at this time of the morning and doing whatever they're doing. I know a lot of people listening at work. I heard that the other day. So I'm glad people are out there having a good time. And this is a good conversation to hear at that time of the morning, especially if you're just waking up. Do want to remind everybody, the Pastor's Show, the Pastor's Spot, is on every Tuesday from 5:10 to 6 p.m. Replays on Wednesday, 3:10 to 4, and then on Sunday morning. So if you didn't hear Tuesday's show, you still have one more chance. Sunday morning, 8:10 to 9 a.m. Now, this show will replay on Sunday morning from 9:10 to 10 a.m., and then on Tuesday from 6:10 to 7. Pastor, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Scott. Have a blessed week.
The WDIF, they wanted me to bring the weather, continue the weather there.